Alright, this is kind of like a creator's commentary of my documentary, Hollywood Insiders, full disclosure. And a little bit about myself. I'm pretty much just a computer nerd who became 9/11 aware in early 2006. And before that time, I thought, you know, the deepest truths were scientific, you know, and had to do with the connection between classical mechanics and quantum mechanics and things like that. And I didn't really think anything spiritual was going on at all. But when I found out about 9/11 through documentaries like Loose Change and a couple others, it hit me hard. And it's not just because the CIA or whoever would be willing to kill so many of us just for their own interests and to further their own plans and agendas, but more than that, it required the compliance of CNN, Fox News, the newspaper. I mean, as soon as I found out about 9/11, it became evident how big this had to be because of how many entities were keeping the truth from me. The History Channel, Discovery Channel, PBS. I mean, everybody was playing ball with this story, and the story itself is a rather sloppy crime. So you would have to be willingly playing ball with it because the crime is so sloppy. So I became 9/11 aware. I started tumbling, and soon enough I'm talking about something else other than Republicans and Democrats, that's for sure. With full disclosure, Hollywood Insiders, I basically just wanted to keep it brief. I was aiming for brevity, pretty much. I didn't want to bore you, and there was a lot of stuff that I willingly took out. I didn't think it was a strong enough case, or I didn't really think that it was worth the filler. You know, I really tried to keep it short and make sure that I wasn't wasting a second. For the most part, the documentary came out as I envisioned, minus a couple problems with the audio. There were the noise reduction program that I used messed with my S's at the back of the words, so it was kind of bad how I had to set up my audio studio here in order to get a good sound and low noise. So, but other than that, it came out like I envisioned. And the point of it was to allow others to analyze for themselves, and not so much just showing you a bunch of pictures of pyramids and all-seeing eyes. And I mean, you know, so they put it in movies, but you know, the next question after that is, what does it all mean? I mean, why? Well, the symbols are done for characters. They're done to give the insiders a reference point to who's who. And so I wanted to make a documentary that helped others kind of analyze these stories for themselves and, you know what to look for. And that's pretty much it. My first documentary was Star Wars Unveiled, What Makes the Light. It's still viewable in a couple places. It was poorly done. The audio was poorly done. Everything about it was pretty much poor. The premise was that the man who would be king was rooted in the Book of Enoch and the Bible, and that Star Wars had a connection to the man who would be king, and that it's the same exact character, and that Vader was Jesus, and that's pretty much the premise of the video. My second video was What Makes the Light, Hollywood Insiders, where I start taking in even more stories. I covered The Matrix, Harry Potter, and some of those same ones that you saw in Full Disclosure. But it was needlessly long, just poorly done. Once again, I don't think I really expressed myself and what I really wanted to say. I wouldn't bother watching any of them. The third one was Fallen Angels, and this was a little bit better production. It was pretty much the first 20 minutes of Full Disclosure expanded to a whole documentary, so it was needlessly long. It goes over all the little details and all the little scriptural evidence, but that I decided to skip in full disclosure because it's just boring, frankly. The fourth one was Dark Stars, and it tried to cover synchronicities, predictive programming, and how they're exerting themselves, because we always hear about, you know, demons exerting themselves on humans and, you know, putting 666 and subliminals, and I mean, who's doing all this, and how do they manifest themselves through our hands? And so that's something that I tried to cover, you know, discussing demons and muses and how singers and songwriters get a lot of their, and storytellers, in this case, get a lot of their stories from, is through muses and demons. And the fifth one was Revelations. And you've pretty much seen all of the material that was in Revelations in full disclosure, so there's no need to really look at that one either. It's pretty much just Batman, Watchmen, the Men in Black segments, and you've pretty much seen it. And then this one, full disclosure, I pretty much just tried to keep to the facts and not waste a moment, not waste a single second, just, you know, from topic to topic, and I tried to make it all a coherent story. So there it is. I started stumbling across stuff like Star Wars when I opened up my mind to new religions. Primarily, in this case, it would be Islam. I mean, I'm not a Muslim or anything, but I don't think they're entirely wrong. They still have something to be learned from them. And one of the things was the hairy beast who can't, you know, you can't tell his front from his back. And I remember hearing that, and then I remember seeing the segment about Jordan Maxwell saying that the Freemasons actually believe in Yoda, and I'm thinking, you know, maybe Star Wars is just one of those stories that's loaded with real characters. And so I said, well, you know, if that's true, then, you know, if Chewbacca's Jasasa, then that means that Han Solo, his buddy, is the Antichrist. But I had no real reference point, except for the fact that he was mistaken for a god. However, I had also come to the same conclusion regarding, you know, who Danny and the man who would be king was, who was the Antichrist, and so I assumed, well, you know, these two characters should have something in common if they're indeed the same character, and they are, and they do have something in common, a lot of things in common, Han Solo and Danny from the man who would be king. So I had my first reference point, like a connecting binding element there, and I already had the Jasasa. So, you know, Islam kind of won a bit of credibility when it was backed up by Star Wars and a lot of other things that we'll, you know, I've already gotten to and we'll get to later. And one of the reasons that I don't discount anybody's retelling of, you know, any story, you know, whether it's religious or, you know, Islam or Greek or Egyptian mythology, I don't really discount them because I'm fully aware that we're living under an altered state of history. We're not, the history that we know is completely false. You know, Christopher Columbus discovers America. World War II just popped out of nowhere. It had nothing to do with bankers or nothing like that. It had nothing to do with the UN at all or setting that up. No, you know. So the History Channel and, you know, the history books and your history professors and everybody's just telling you this completely bogus story and having you memorize it and regurgitate it. And you know, you have those maps, if you, anybody's ever read Fingerprints of the Gods, you know, you have maps that were longitudinally and latitudinally correct despite the fact that such things shouldn't have been back then. You know, you got the 1500s and then you got a map that's accurate and knows what the Antarctica looks like below the ice caps. So we're living in an altered history. Apparently there was a civilization on Earth before, completely wiped out, and now we're just rebuilding, coming back again, and we think that we're all doing this for the first time, but there really was an advanced civilization, or some kind of advanced civilization on Earth before us. And so, you know, you can't really discredit anybody because nobody's going to have it completely right and nobody's going to be completely wrong. And all the religions seem to be telling the same story anyways. So the harmony, or should I say the disharmony, is really not there. In that, you know, like you've got in the Genesis story of pretty much everybody's traditions, you have a flood and these beings that came from the stars and started making mutants with themselves and mixing their genetics with the genetics of others and controlling humanity and just making all these genetically modified beings, and you just hear the story over and over again. And you have the characters too, you know, the characters in Egyptian mythology having these strange counterparts with characters in Greek or Roman mythology. It just seems to be like the same story over and over, similar to how the movies go, where you know, they're all these movies, the Rodel Dorado, Stargate, The Man Who Would Be King, they're all based on the same singular story, but they're just three different retellings. You know, and what if the exact same thing were happening religiously, you know, where Islam is telling a slightly different telling of the story, and Christians and the Greeks and the Egyptians, and the Illuminati does seem to focus on Egyptian symbolism more than most. Egyptian and biblical is usually what they stick with. But the disharmony that most people assume is there regarding the different religions, I really don't see. Then the Illuminati feel comfortable enough telling the stories in a mixed set, kind of like how you saw with Hellboy, where he had connections with the biblical Antichrist, the Islamic Antichrist, and then you had all these weird Egyptian connotations, and yet it was going on simultaneously. The writer felt free to take a little bit and dabble a little bit from everybody's mythology, but maybe that's not what was happening. What was happening was he was dabbling from the truth, and it just resembles everybody's mythology because everybody's mythology also represents or resembles the truth. And, you know, characters like even Apollo are mentioned in the Bible, so there's quite a bit of overlap, even if you look at the religions. And then, so that's where, you know, like documentaries like Zeitgeist, for instance, they point out all these copies of the characters, like this Jesus character who has appeared in 20 separate religions. And I can't accept that it's just symbolism, because when I hear 20 copies of the same story, I'm more likely to think that it's a real story in literal terms as opposed to symbolism. Like if you arrive at a crime scene and you start asking all the witnesses, what did they see? Well, you know, they'll all give you the same story generally from a slightly different perspective. You know, you can't really rely on any individual's perspective, but if you can get everybody's perspective, find out where they all agree and where they vary, you can find out generally what happened with a high degree of accuracy. And it's the same with true with, I mean, like if you had a character who was very drunk and said he saw UFO or lights in the sky, you could say, oh yeah, whatever. And you had a drunk and a schizophrenic in the same place out in the middle of nowhere said they just saw lights in the sky. Then you have to kind of take it seriously, because you know, it's not likely that they're having this collective hallucination. So even if you don't believe the source, as in, I don't believe in Egyptian mythology, there's still part of this collective hallucination here where they are telling the same story. And even if you don't fully trust a drunk or a schizophrenic, when they're telling the same story, maybe it just happened. So that's my opinion on that. You know, Zeitgeist found many copies of this Jesus character, many copies of a flood. To me, this is just more evidence that this is not symbolism, because symbolism doesn't usually transcend religion to religion. Only the literal aspects transcend it from religion to religion. You know, Islam, Christianity, Buddhism, they all use different symbolism. The Hebrew, the Jewish faith, they all use different symbolism, but the literal parts are all lined up, and usually symbolism doesn't transfer over to another religion. So it's not likely that the flood they're talking about is a symbolic one. It's more likely to be a literal flood, because symbolism simply does not transcend religion as easily as the literal version would. And like I said, the Illuminati are very comfortable with taking Egyptian and biblical texts and, you know, stories out of Greek mythology. They're not shy about any of this, and the reason is because these are all the same characters. They just have a different name. It might be Anubis in Egyptian, Beast of the Sea in the Bible, and Dajjal for the Muslims. But, you know, they're talking about the same characters. You know, the problem with both the extremely atheistic and the extremely religious is that the extremely atheistic both of these groups are forever shut off from a certain amount of knowledge. I'll tell you that right now. The atheistic group, they're pretty much closed off because they won't believe anything spiritual. The religious group, on the other hand, won't believe anything except the interpretation of their own religion. So now, not only are they usually extremely locked in to a religion to where they won't believe a single word from another source. But aside from that, they're also locked into the interpretation of that religion, where they, one Christian will argue with another about the interpretation of the mark of the beast or whatever. So there's differences even between. And so both sides are extremely mind-controlled because they're both going to be forever kept out of a certain amount of knowledge. The Garden of Eden and the serpent wasn't actually a snake, and yet you'll have plenty of Christians who will fight with you tooth and nail on that. They're very picky, or should I say not very picky. It's very arbitrary what they choose to believe is symbolic and what is literal. You know, a Christian will say that the Book of Revelation is written in symbolism and allegory, and the Book of Genesis is just is literal. There actually was a serpent, and there was an Eve, and there was a fruit, and she actually did eat a real fruit, and humanity was forever damned because of this. It's very easy to see why the zeitgeist kind of people can poke fun at those kind of stories, because they're such an easy target. Taken literally, they're ridiculous. And you got the story of Cain, who's worried about a mark on his head, and he says, "Don't send me out there. The people out there are gonna do something to me." And so the Lord puts a mark on his head so that nobody will harm him. Well, the problem is that you should be the only one. You, Adam and Eve, should be the only ones on earth. So if the Christian literal story were true, what is Cain worried about? It's many of these inconsistencies that make me think that these are just symbolic stories. And once we find the overlap and where they all agree, we can generally discover what's true and what's just a figment of the mutation that's been done through translation and whatever. It's like there's no harmony between the UFO people and the demon people. The Christians say it's all demons, and the UFO people don't believe in demons, they believe in aliens, and the religious people don't believe in aliens, don't even want to talk about flying saucers, but we'll talk about demons. But what if these are all just the same character in a different name, and it's an angel to one, and it's a demon to another, and it's a fairy to another, and it's a vampire to... they're probably just different names. But most people get so locked in and so mind controlled by their own personal faith and their own personal religion that they're going to be forever barred from that. And then there appears to be no harmony, but I do find harmony between, the alien story and the demon story, and, whether this is a dimensional thing or galactic thing. Are they from Alpha Draconis, or are they from the pit of hell, there's plenty of mentions in the Bible about beings coming from the earth and coming out of the water, coming out of the earth, and the devil was cast into the earth, and you will be a vagabond in the earth. And it was just, there's all these mentions of it, but a lot of it appears to be symbolism. But they're generally just the same people. Now, they're the same characters. You have people, kind of like David Icke and Michael Tazarian, both of which kind of sent me on this path of knowledge. I'm not going to sit here and say that they're completely wrong nor completely right. They definitely were, they influenced my personal direction. But aside from that, my own personal research was coming up with stuff that they had already come across. And, Michael Tazarian and David Icke, they're good sources of information, but a lot of their opinions and interpretations of their own information, I don't totally agree with, but you don't have to. The point is that I started to think that he was on to something from the beginning, because you don't have to really do too much New World Order research before you run into this special bloodline, and this bloodline who traces themselves back to Babylon, Egypt, and then eventually to these star beings, fallen angels, whatever you want to call them. And there's all these traces of this half-breed creation. In the mythical texts, there's all these traces of, beings that were half human and half fallen angel, half demon, half alien, whatever, reptilian. The names just go on and on, but I think the characters and who we're talking about is very much the same thing. These And why do I talk about vampires? Well, you know, for one, I don't want to talk about vampires because it makes me look crazy. The problem is that it's something that got harder and harder to ignore when it comes to popping up in research and just popping up everywhere. It became harder to ignore the general attributes that these characters are. So, you know, maybe David Icke's shape-shifting, blood-drinking shapeshifters are maybe just vampires or leftovers from the days when genetic manipulation was happening here, and, you know, the angels mixed themselves in with something, and so... But the general characteristics of these beings are they're selfish. They don't have the conscience that we do. Pragmatism comes much easier for them. They're more led and driven by more social, selfish desires. And there's always going to be this enmity between us and them in regards to their ways and ours, because humans have a conscience and humans have feelings. And so that's what the Illuminati is kind of always working uphill when it comes to having to counteract our basic goodness. You know, we have a basic darkness, but we also have a basic goodness, and it's in, you know, subverting that basic goodness has taken centuries. They're well on their way, but what they're trying to do is make us like them and their ways like ours. There is not so much harmony between their ways because it's easier for them to commit crimes and have not a conscience about it. So there's always going to be this this tension, because we'll never understand their ability to be so mean and callous. It's allegedly they're not all like this. They're not all bad, but on the average, they're more corrupted than we are, because doing things like altruism does not even occur to them. You know, just basic self-preservation is their main goal. You know, they see it kind of like evolution, like they're superior, and that this they are a function of natural selection is actually how they view themselves. And I also believe that there is a separate world out there, like, you know, how in Harry Potter you have the world of the Muggles and the magical world. Well, similarly, I think that there's an element of truth to that, whether that's underground cities or whether that's an extra-dimensional place that these djinn go. I don't know. But I'm starting to believe that this place actually does exist. And the idea is starting to seem, you know, less crazy. You know, I get the question a lot, why movies? You know, why are they worth hearing? Why are they worth even analyzing? I mean, if they're just fiction, then they're not really worth analyzing. But if you start connecting movies to reality, and then you start doing your research about who's writing these stories, you come to the conclusion that there's something else being told. The question is, why? Why do they insist on even telling us? They could just as easily do their predictive programming and get us used to vaccinations and troops in the streets, and they could use movies to do all of these things without putting in these mythological characters. And the fact that that's an unanswerable question just leads me to believe that they're doing it with even more purpose than most of us are aware, because there really is no good reason to do that. They could just do all their programming and desensitize us to violence and hate and everything, you know, just by regular movies that don't include any characters or any repeating mythological anything. So the question always comes up, why do they do it? Well, a little bit of it is predictive programming, getting us used to, getting us to respond to something in a predictable way so that we'll respond how they want us to respond when this event happens or that event happens, because we've seen it so many times. And then when it does happen, we respond similar to how we had seen others respond in the movies. And so there is a predictive programming there, but there also appears to be a little bit of free will in that they are bound by the certain rule to engage our free will, to tell us what they're doing before they do it. And that's a necessary part of, like, their religion is putting symbols everywhere. I don't quite understand it. I don't know if the devil's got an obligation to reveal himself and what he's doing, and I'm not really sure. But there is a predictive programming aspect to it. You know, our minds have been attacked from the beginning. We never had a chance. The cartoons you remember when you were a kid, they were all just programming, and the advertisements and everything was just programming. We never had a chance. Video games, music, you name it. It's easier to hide the real truth in something like a comic book than a literal story, because when people go to a movie theater and they see one movie and then they see another movie that's got demons and ghosts, they've got their guard down. They're ready to hear anything, and because of that, you can show them more of the literal truth in the movie, and they won't take it real because it was just symbolism to, or it was just entertainment to them, and they had their guard down because they're just hearing this, what it sounds like an obviously fictional story involving demons and this and that, aliens, and you really have your guard down. So in the craziest stories, you could find the most truth, and in the more practical movies and stories, you find the least literal truth and more symbolism, because in those wild stories where anything's possible, anything's possible, and because of that, the viewer is already prepared to hear anything crazy, and right when they're prepared to hear something crazy, you give it to them, except you're giving them the truth, which is always crazy. And you know, it's hard not to notice some of these repeating characters, like the three-pack, for instance. You know, you've got this repeating theme of three villains, two of them male and one of them female. And I mean, this turns up again and again and again and again and again. This Dogma, The Lion King, Gabriel, Hellboy, Blade. The story just, Tomb Raider, or well, not so much Tomb Raider, but this theme is very repetitive, and I haven't quite figured out who these three characters are entirely, but one of the characters is named Asmodeus, which is discussed in Full Disclosure. And Asmodeus repeatedly, as I had said, is usually depicted as intelligent, very sadistic, just likes to cut people up, really. Real sadistic kind of guy. And that's a reoccurring theme where he's often portrayed as an artist, where he considers himself an artist, and not only that, but he is good at writing music and writing stories. But like I said, he has a disdain for life. This guy is just black in the heart, completely dark. And that's usually how the Joker is portrayed, dark. And it's repetitive. Like, you can even find him in movies like Saw, where you have this character wears a mask and he's got the spirals on his face. And if you look at in the movie Gabriel, if you look at Asmodeus's tattoo on his hand, it's the exact same spiral, along with the fact that Asmodeus is the kind of guy who likes to test people's souls, that he likes to really put you to the test. And that's a reoccurring theme too, that he's more interested in corrupting people than so much killing you. Another reoccurring theme that really wasn't discussed in Fallen Angels, I'll probably regret it later, is the reoccurring theme of the colors purple and scarlet. These colors appear over and over again, usually as an organization that wears scarlet. In The Man Who Would Be King, Danny was wearing purple. In El Dorado, Michael was wearing purple and red. Scarlet, by the way, is basically red with a slight tinge of orange. But usually what you'll see is just purple and red. If you look at the Joker, for instance, especially the first Joker, the Jack Nicholson's Joker, his is a very blatant use of not just purple and red, but purple and scarlet, specifically scarlet, in that he's got a little bit of orange in his clothes, and so he's going around wearing purple and scarlet. This color combination is from the Bible, you know, where it says the whore of Babylon is wearing purple and scarlet, which is basically just purple and red. Even in The Simpsons, it comes up, you know, if you'll notice all the Masons, quote-unquote, or all the stonecutters are wearing purple and scarlet, purple and red. And in Watchmen, Ozymandias' choice is purple, and Spawn, and Batman. This organization is usually connected to the colors purple and red, and usually has some kind of red on them. And it's very similar to like the Pope, you know, where the Pope, or you got the Catholic Church, where the cardinals are going around wearing scarlet. They're wearing red. So it's you know, it's kind of like that, where you, scarlet and red is usually represents an entire organization. And they have this whole culture that's going on beneath the surface, you know, like the beast of the sea being at some time underwater. You know, they have this whole huge set of symbolism that is just in layers. So while we're watching one thing, they're seeing another. The characters that we see and we perceive are not the same. Like during the Men in Black segment, it spoke of oriental-looking characters that weren't quite human. And if you look in a lot of movies, Asians are often used as henchmen. Now, normally we think that's just because, you know, the karate traditions, you know, the martial arts traditions that go on in the Orient, and so we think that the henchmen, that's the purpose for that. But I think in some cases, these people with Asiatic faces are used as henchmen because they are once again drawing from reality. And they've got, like, you know, the two, Peachy and Danny, from The Man Who Would Be King, arriving with a horse, you know. So while we just see a horse, the insiders look at the horse and then look at the color of the horse and then knows who that is, just based on the color. They've got this whole separate culture that is aside from our own. And they use events like darkness, like because these events happen in the Bible, you know, where you have periods of darkness, earthquakes, things falling from the sky. In the movies, something similar happens, where there'll be a blackout, or there'll be an earthquake, or things will fall from the sky. These are used as reference points to the prophetic timeline, to where, what part of the timeline they're talking about. So, you know, when it goes dark, you can just scan through and find out what part of the prophecies, you know, does it go dark? Is there full darkness? And that's pretty probably where they start, where you're at in the movie. A lot of movies have these variations in them in different endings. Like, what's often brought up to me is, you know, okay, well, they're different. Why is it they're always different endings? Well, firstly, you would notice if they all ended the same, included the same exact characters. So they have to tweak it a little bit, but you don't even have to be a big believer in any of my theories to notice that The Road to El Dorado and The Man Who Would Be King, or The Man Who Would Be King and Stargate, have quite a bit in common. And yet they ended all differently. In The Man Who Would Be King, Danny gets killed, Peachy is alive and burned. In The Road to El Dorado, they both escape, but they don't get their gold. And Stargate, one goes, one stays, and rules, and peace and prosperity. So these are clearly the same story, but these are different opinions on how the story ends. So you should be prepared for that. Don't get locked into thinking, well, it didn't end this way, or this person won the fight rather than that person, so it can't be the same character. Don't get locked into that at all, and don't get locked into gender roles either, like they won't portray a male as a female or vice versa. You just stick to the characters themselves, because they always insert these small tweaks. In Star Wars, it's actually one of the robots, I forget the name, but not R2-D2, but the other one that gets mistaken for a god, not Han Solo. Han Solo doesn't get mistaken for a god. It's so that's just a small tweak, and they do that a lot. It's different endings and slightly different retellings, but it's the same characters. And vampire movies in particular have quite a bit to tell us about the real world, like Queen of the Damned, Twilight, Underworld, Blade. These movies have quite a bit in common and have a lot to tell us about what's going on in our own world. And so I think that they're worth analyzing merely because of the fact that they're rooted in so much truth. Queen of the Damned, for instance, is a standard Beast of the Sea, Beast of the Earth story where you have the Beast of the Sea, who's the Antichrist, and he has all these promises whispered into his ear by Aaliyah, who plays as Beast of the Earth, and he becomes a god and, you know, whatever, worshipped as such. The point is that there's always a tweak, and the most obscure stories are often the best sources, because the truth is in itself obscure. The truth includes the shapeshifters, or whatever you want to call them. The truth includes horrible conspiracies and fluoride in the water. So you should be prepared for all the other craziness that's out there. And that's pretty much all I wanted to say about that. A lot of loose ends. I'll probably include them into another documentary. I work on my website is HollywoodInsiders.net, and you could go there occasionally and see whether I'm working on something new, but for the most part, that's a wrap. So, good luck and take care.